Esperanza. Esperanza. Hope. Light. Hope. That's a piece from Haiti, Dara J, on the album Break the Chains. And this is Carol with Arts Live and Local from the Parking Lot. And Nevada on the other end. And some wonderful guests coming up. And I want to send this out to all of us who made it so far. Got a long way to go in so many ways, but I think we've turned a bit of a corner. A little bit of relief and esperanza and light. Actually, the sun just came out. Thanks for being here with me. I'm delighted. We heard Laura Veers on E-Town, and Laura was right here at KMUN on one of my shows way back when she was, an unknown with Danny from Seattle, Danny Banjo. He brought her along, so it's lovely to make community in so many ways. And healing wishes go out to all in need for so many reasons. For those who have passed and left us behind, including some of our wonderful artists, and for those who are struggling, Gail in London, and for all of us who hopefully will stay healthy, be healthy, and take care of ourselves and each other. And you know what I'm gonna say? The best healing I can think of in addition to community is the arts. So this, my first guests, combine both. Although what they're bringing us is a little strange, and I'm gonna let Jennifer Greer with her first novel, but an experienced writer, tell you all about it. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Carol. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And indeed, it is. The sky turned blue. And Jennifer, I believe, is a KMUN virgin. Is that true? Have you ever been here before?
That's a good way to put it, yes. I have not.
Okay. Have you been on the radio before, though?
Yes, I have. I actually was a news anchor for the university in Fresno, California.
I suspected as much. And I didn't know you were a news anchor, but I knew you were a crime reporter for the Fresno Bee. Is that correct?
Yes, I was. For their, they have a neighborhood newspaper. And so while my last couple years in college, I was a crime reporter for the Fresno Bee.
Okay. And okay, folks, that was your kind of hint as to what's coming. But before we get there with Jennifer's first novel, her debut novel, a thriller, I want to introduce my other guest, someone who is not a KMUN virgin by any means, someone very familiar to our local audience, Nancy McCarthy. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Good. And Nancy is going to talk to us about the Northwest Authors Series in Cannon Beach, for which Jennifer is the featured author tomorrow, actually. But here's something I didn't know about Nancy, even though I've known her for years, and we've kind of collaborated on a few things. Nancy also was a crime reporter for the Oregonian. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. Just want to make sure my audience doesn't think I'm making this stuff up. Because we all know you around here as writing all kinds of stuff, but not that.
So I covered murder and mayhem for the Oregonian for a while, yep.
Was that the name of your column? Murder and mayhem?
I guess they called it public safety, but the first day that I went on to that beat, we had three murders.
Oh,
so it kind of started out with a bang.
Right. Wow. Murder and Mayhem. I'm just jotting that down. It sounds like either the title of a book or, take note, Jennifer, or perhaps a poem or a song or even a musical group. There you go. Okay, well, let me go back to Jennifer. And you actually live here now. Is that right, in Manzanita?
Right. I moved to Manzanita 5 years ago.
Okay, so you're a local author. I don't know whether I think the author's series tries to focus on regional writers. Is that correct, Nancy?
Yeah, we have writers from Washington and Oregon and people who can make it to our, usually when we do this, we have the library, you know, they come to the library, but lately we've been doing a lot of Zoom and Facebook Live with our authors, so they can come from anywhere now.
Okay. Well, I have to say, although I have been to a couple of the live ones, which is terrific, of course, I am very grateful for being able to tune in from a distance, even if it's only 50 miles in my case. So, Jennifer, crime reporter, but this novel is a mystery and crime thriller. And how does it feel to go from news reporting and nonfiction into your first novel being this material? Is this a natural progression?
I think it is, because as a journalist, I mean, you're gathering facts and, you know, assimilating them into a story and then presenting that story so that it's understandable and the characters, you know, sort of leap off the page with all the details and the color and your word choice. So I think it's a natural progression.
And do you dream about mystery and crimes as well? I mean,
you know, it's funny. I really don't. You know, I'm a news junkie, but I read all different kinds of news. But I do often wake up with like a scene formulating in my brain.
Ooh.
And I jump out of bed and start taking notes.
Wonderful. So am I right? Did I read that this is the first of a series that you're planning?
Yes, it is. You know, I didn't know what to expect. In fact, the thing I didn't expect the most was that my readers on my feedback from this book is that they really love the two main characters, the two female characters, and they want to see a series. So I'm working on the second book now.
Fantastic. So you've got a journalist, Whit McKenna, and a medical examiner, Katie Riggs. I'm going to let you tell us as much as you wish about the story. One of the things that attracted me, although I must admit, I said to Nancy, I am not a thriller person. I have too much of an imagination, and I don't want someone climbing in my house and coming to murder me. So I try to stay away from that stuff. But I loved all of this stuff I was reading about you, including the characters, female protagonists, and also that takes place in Medford, Oregon. Did you live in Medford, or why did you pick Medford?
Yes, actually, I raised my children in Medford. I have two daughters, and I lived in Medford for 20 years.
Okay. So are we likely to recognize some of your characters?
No, and I don't want to have a libel suit against me for that either.
You've got a few composites in there, probably. Tell us, give us as much as you want of a story about how this comes together.
Well, I really wanted to write about a journalist, because when I was raising my kids, you know, that was my focus, and I really wanted to get out in the world and actually be a journalist. But I ended up being a single parent, and so that's where this character came out. And in this storyline, she's in a small town recovering from being an international war correspondent when a calamity happens and her husband is killed in Afghanistan. Well, in her recovery process, she goes to this little town thinking, okay, I'll write for this small newspaper while I recover. Only One murder after another happens, and it becomes this international news story, and so that's where it started.
Mm-hmm. And there's your murder and mayhem, Nancy.
That's right. Yeah.
Come on the job, and immediately I have all these. But you guys didn't know each other. I mean, that wasn't part of your plan. And who's the medical detective? Was that just you needed that for the details?
Well, I needed the character because I ended up in my research discovering about these really bizarre tumors. And so I sort of wrapped the story around this. And I needed a medical examiner, and I also wanted her to be a detective. So I interviewed the medical examiner detective in Medford, and that position is unique in Medford. Most of them don't have, they're either in the morgue or they're a detective. In his case, he's both. So it worked perfectly. Oh.
Wow. So that's because it's a small town?
I don't know. It's a very well-run and organized community as far as the policing goes, and I think they've done a wonderful job of filling in all the different niches and stuff so people don't fall through the cracks, so to speak.
Excellent.
It worked out beautifully for my character.
And yes, yes. We don't know if they are able to solve the string of deaths in Medford, but... that's why we need to read your book. And the name of the book is A Desperate Place. Is that supposed to describe Medford or a place in time? Or
you know, I felt bad about that because I love Medford.
I would.
No,
oh, sorry.
I had these other names in mind, and then I realized, what's the one thing that links all of my victims together?
Uh-huh.
Well, they were all emotionally and mentally in a desperate place and willing to make choices that really ended in their life. So that's where that came from. It was a metaphor.
That's okay. I hope you wrote that somewhere. That's part of your disclaimer. How big a book is this, by the way?
It's a general thrillers run about 300 pages, so about 95 to 97,000 words.
Okay. Before we go any further, and I'm going to let Nancy talked to this a little bit later, but tomorrow, Saturday, January 23rd at 2 p.m., you will be giving a talk, a reading, and this will be online. So am I correct? CannonBeachLibrary.org is the place to go?
Yeah, that's where they can find the link to... To get to the presentation, and they don't. It's a combination of Zoom and Facebook Live. You don't have to be on Facebook Live. You don't have to be a subscriber to Facebook in order to do it. All you have to do is to just go to the library website, and there's a banner at the top, and just click that on, and it should lead you right to the presentation.
I heard the magic word there. Should.
We never take anything for granted in the online world.
Exactly. And I've had some challenges there, to put it mildly. But I'm going to try to access this. And will this program be available after tomorrow as well?
Yes, we're planning to record it, and it will be on our Facebook page. And it should probably be on our website as well.
Good. Good. Okay. Why don't you tell us a little more about that, and then I want to get back to you, Jen, because I understand you've been a traveler. I'm always interested in that. So, Nancy, what's the story on the Northwest Authors series?
Well, when COVID hit and we had a whole lineup of authors, we thought, oh, no, we're going to have to cancel everything. But then we realized we had Zoom and Facebook, and so we've managed to continue to host our authors through Zoom and Facebook Live. And we have Jennifer is kicking off our 2021 series with her book and her presentation tomorrow. And then in February, we have, this is something else we need to talk about maybe later on, Carol, our Writers Read Celebration. You're familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And we just selected, a panel just selected 13 essays and poems and stories by 10 writers, and that will be at 7 o'clock on February 20th.
Okay.
And in March we will have Gregory Noakes, actually who I worked with at the Oregonian.
Right.
He wrote a book called, he's written several books, but his latest is Breaking Chains, Slavery on Trial in the Oregon Territory. And I think that's really very relevant to what we're experiencing now. That will be at 2 p.m. on Saturday, March 20th.
I saw him in person before in the last era at Fort Clatsop as part of their series.
Great. He's great. Yeah, he's a very good presenter.
Then
a mystery writer that is quite popular in this area, J.A. Jantz, will be joining us at 2 o'clock Saturday, April 10th. On Zoom, so we have a nice lineup right now. We may hopefully have the Fisher Poets later in the year as well. We're having a little bit of variety of everything.
And how long has the Northwest Authors Series been going on?
It's actually been going on in some form or another for probably about 8 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on the committee for about 4 years, and I think we've hosted an awful lot of writers from all over Washington and Oregon. So it's a kind of a tradition at the library now.
The library is a very sweet spot. I've been there for several different functions. It's not terribly big, and one of the times I went, I can't remember who it was, but the room was packed to the hilt.
Yeah,
and then there was the overflow into the main part of the library, and I thought, wow, this is fabulous.
We get I know some of our writers and some of our events that we've had 60 or 70 people there, and they kind of hanging out. We have the chairs, but sometimes they run out of chairs and they're kind of hanging there on
that's
the shelf,
what happened. Wait,
listening to the,
right.
the speakers.
Right. All out the room, too. So.
Yep.
Well, that's terrific. And as was just on our last show, E-Town, the guest who was talking about a fix-it rather than recycling, re-fix-it and reuse, and he was saying they hold their workshops at libraries because that's where people are accustomed to going to learn.
Yeah.
And so I was delighted because I thought, hey, we have a library coming up.
Well, we recycle in all kinds of ways.
yes, absolutely. So back to this month's, and Nancy, let me ask you one more question. Since I'm fascinated by the idea of you being a crime reporter, is that one of your favorite genres? Is that one of the reasons? Because I think I heard you say in April you'll have another mystery writer as well. So is that?
Well, it's something. It's one of my, I wouldn't say one of my favorites, but I do read mysteries and I enjoy trying to piece the puzzle together. I think it's an extreme favorite of a lot of people in this area. I volunteer on the desk there at the library, and mysteries are predominant there. People tend to check out mysteries more than any other genre.
I want to explore that another time.
Yeah.
I want people to explain that to me. So I understand. Well, I don't know. Suspense can be a little bit painful, too. But okay, Jennifer, back to Jennifer Greer, our guest who is kicking off the 2021 Northwest Cannon Beach Library Northwest Authors Series tomorrow, January 23rd at 2 p.m., with her book, A Desperate Place, and it is a mystery and crime thriller with two female protagonists, and it takes place in Medford, Oregon, allegedly. Okay, it is a novel. Let's keep that in mind. Okay, now, Jennifer, I read that you traveled to Russia, lived in London, spent time in Croatia, and I wondered what all of that was about. Was that part of your writing professional work or joy?
Well, in a sense it was. I was a late sort of return student because I worked in a family business for about 8 years. So when I went back to school, to college, I was in my late 20s, and I really wanted to travel, and I was very involved in journalism at the time in the school and outside of the school, and so part of my interest was learning about international affairs. So I did attend college in London for 6 months and traveled all over the world during the next 6 months, and then I went back to Berlin and attended an international correspondence seminar.
Hmm.
So I love traveling, and I love learning about countries and history.
Are you still doing that? Well, not right now, not this year, but...
Yeah, no, oh my gosh, no, yeah. I will be. I will
Good.
Be once things settle up.
And also something that interested me, and I'd like you to tell us what it was. I can let you guess, but I'll tell you. It was an article on women and children refugees. What was that about?
Oh,
an award-winning
after
article.
My foreign correspondence seminar, I was in Berlin, and the war in Croatia had been suspended with the peace treaty. And while I was there, the peace treaty fell apart. So I rented a car, grabbed a couple of colleagues, and went into the war zone and just interviewed a lot of people while I was there, and the women and children, refugees, and I spent a couple of weeks in the running around in the front lines and just had the most amazing experience. And that article that I wrote won first place for the intercollegiate features.
Nice. Are you still doing journalism?
I'm not right now. I kind of consider what I'm doing is journalism because my book, what I'm writing is all based in science and history and all of that. So I do a lot of research.
Mm-hmm. And since this is the first with these two characters, do you have, you said you started to write already. So did you pick a new place or did you, are you carrying on in Medford?
Well, because it's a series and the two characters are living there, I will continue this series in Medford. And, you know, it's very difficult to get the reader's attention in a normal environment. And then you've got COVID and an election year, and there's over a million books a year published in the U.S. alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, trying to get people's attention during all of that, you really have to be, I think, on your game and working hard at being an entertainer and a source of information. So I really work at getting, you know, a lot of details and facts in my stories. So that's what I've been doing. And, you know, and it's worked out. I mean, the average book sells about 250 books a year.
Mm-hmm.
And the first day we came out the gate with 2,000.
Woo!
Sold. So,
fabulous.
Yeah, and it's doing very well with great reviews.
That is fabulous. So where can people get your book? I should say I have my disclaimer is that we try to keep to local bookstores usually. I don't know if anyone is open.
Yes, Canby Beach is carrying my book.
Good.
Seaside is carrying it. Manzanita Bookstore is carrying it.
Great.
That's awesome. So those three local bookstores.
Excellent. And is there any place personal online? Leave out the big A.
Right. Well, you know, almost every library is also carrying it.
Oh,
so
fantastic. Know
that.
Okay.
And most of them are carrying it in book form and audio. So you can check the local library here. And
who's reading
and then,
the
of course,
audio?
You can go. Almost any bookstore online is also carrying it.
Fantastic. Who's doing the audio?
Let me check here.
You are well organized.
I was able to pick the voice. It's read by Kirsten Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And she has been reading for a while for some of the better known authors. Tammy Hoag, who's also a thriller writer, and some others. So it's out there in that form as well.
Yeah.
If people are interested in that.
Okay. So the name is Jennifer Greer, G-R-E-E-R, and the book is A Desperate Place, and tomorrow would be a great time to see her. I guess if you get on Zoom, you might even be able to ask some questions.
Yeah, you can. People can send in their questions beforehand, or if they're on Facebook, they can write questions on Facebook. So, and we will be monitoring that so that we have a couple people working this situation here tomorrow.
Great.
So we will have somebody looking at the questions and passing them on to either to me to ask Jennifer or directly to Jennifer. So definitely, if people want to ask questions, feel free to do that.
Well, congratulations, and I look forward to hearing about it. I figure 2 o'clock in the afternoon is a safe time for even for me to be hearing about a mystery and crime thriller.
Well, thank you.
And I won't take it to bed with me, but I will, you know, listen in. And thank you so much for being here, for joining me on Arts Live and Local. And congratulations. Next time you'll be a veteran interviewee.
Well, thank you so much for having me today.
You bet. And Nancy McCarthy, thank you as ever for
Thank you, Carol. Keeping... I appreciate the time that you're giving to us.
Wonderful. Be well and enjoy this day and this new era.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Thank you a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And folks, you are listening to KMUN Astoria 91.9. Arts Live and Local, and KTCB in Tillamook at 89.5, coastradio.org, KMUN.org. Stay tuned. We've got a thank you song because a lot of us are feeling very grateful. We still have a long way to go, but we're very grateful. And thank you for all of that. And thank all of you who have helped to make the changes and are continuing. And I wanted to give a shout out to, I thought I was the only one, silly me, my favorite person of Wednesday was Commander Gorman. That's what she called herself. That's going to be her presidential name. That would be the 22-year-old poet we heard at the inauguration, the inaugural poet. Wow. If by some chance you missed her, and Albert played some of her poem today on the radio, and others have to look it up. She was fabulous, and I loved the way she moved, which happens to be, oh, by the way, that was Lizzie West and the White Buffaloes we just heard with Portrait of an Artist. Portrait of an Artist and Moving Beautifully, all of that leads to my next guest. Hi, Celeste.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Celeste Olivares is my guest, and she incorporates the artist, the musician, the dancer, the mover, and I am delighted to host you here on Arts Live and Local from the parking lot on this beautiful sunny afternoon. There's a blue, blue sky. And Celeste, well, I've come to know Celeste and Estelle. Many of us in this community know them as the Tango Twins. As a matter of fact, that's their email handle. And we have been thrilled with the growth until this year, of course, of the Tango community. I'm sure it will pick up again. Am I right?
Yes, that's the hope, for
yes,
sure,
of course. At the Astoria Arts and Movement Center. But Celeste started growing in other ways as well. And one of them was I suddenly saw her on the stage with Midas Digs, which is this terrific local band fronted by our good friend Derek Moore. And, hey, one of the members happens to be right here at KMUN, as a matter of fact. Graham's on the guitar, and one of the songwriters, and Celeste, one of the singers, along with Andrea Mazzarelli. And let's see, who else is in the band?
Our drummer, Mike Morrow.
Mike Morrow, right.
It was a long-time drumming partner with Derek. I think the two of them originally, mm-hmm. they go way back together playing music. So
yeah, and Derek has been here for a long time, and he also slowly emerged theater and then music and then acting and just grew it bigger and bigger, and this band burst through. And one of my favorite parts, including, of course, the voice, was when Celeste sings, she does not stand still. Actually, I'm not sure I've ever seen you stand still. So that brings me to why you're here today, and I'm kind of curious how it is that you're even doing this work. Celeste, in addition to the music and dance, is a fiber artist, and she was actually part of the December show at Imogen Gallery, Hook, Pulp, and Weave, and especially with needle weaving technique, which I'm going to get you to talk about, but what happens? Don't you have to sort of sit or stand still to do that work? And how is that?
Yes, there is actually quite a bit of quietude and patience, that a lot of patience actually involved with the needle weaving work. So, I mean, really it comes down to a graduated form of, you know, my inner child that has always enjoyed stringing beads. Mm-hmm. I've been doing that really since I was a little girl. But I met a woman some years back in the 90s, early 90s, I guess, at a retreat in the woods for summer solstice. And she did this incredible needle weaving work. And she saw that I resonated with it really strongly and saw the work that I was doing, which was also very detailed seed bead type work. And so she invited me to her home in the San Diego mountains. She and her husband lived in the mountains in San Diego for a weekend and basically just handed the work down to me. And we spent several hours where she taught me how to do what, you know, is a form of what I do. So
what does needle weaving mean?
You know, I'm sure that if you were to Google the term, it would probably evoke all sorts of things that aren't even what I do, but that's what it was handed down to me as, which is needle weaving. So it really is a very small, like, it's the loom is something that is really just a handheld, you know, my hands keeping a very taut cord, and then I run a figure eight, a weave, around two other cords. So it's a handmade cord that features, that allows me to feature beadwork really nicely.
Okay, I did not even realize that it's I know you had written hand woven, mm-hmm. but I did not picture it that way.
Yeah.
So how many hands do you need to do this work?
Only my two hands.
Okay. So do you tie it to anything, or are you just holding it in your hands?
Yeah, no, I'm just holding it in my hand. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously starting is always probably a little bit cumbersome at times, but I think that's with anything with hand work and fiber work, where the starting point might be sometimes the most. It's not that complex even, but it just requires this very taut tension. Mm-hmm. So you always have quite a bit of tension in the hand while you're doing that. But otherwise, it's very meditative for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoy it, and it's such a beautiful way to showcase beadwork, you know, and old beads.
So, and that was the thing, you had originally been doing seed beads, mm-hmm. which, and what does that actually mean? Is that refer to the size or the,
yes.
or the is it a
yeah.
particular, can it be glass or plastic or ceramic, or is it?
Yeah, traditionally glass, like Japanese and Czech glass beads are probably the most prominently made and available glass seed beads. And they're called seed beads because they're literally the size of seeds. If you looked at just a bunch of seed beads together, it's like, wow, they are so small, you know, where the bead hole size is a half millimeter to a millimeter,
Ooh.
And the bead itself
yeah.
is, you know, maybe a millimeter to 2 millimeters. So really small work.
Is that what's used in indigenous work as well?
Sometimes, yes. Mm-hmm. And you get larger trade beads, too, which are, you know, just you know, a few millimeters up from that with maybe a larger bead hole size.
I see.
And like the old white heart beads that are hand-formed, you know, those old trade beads.
Mm-hmm.
But they got some pretty small trade beads. And, you know, those, it's been great also just to educate myself on the history of beads, which if I keep talking, I'm going to get myself in trouble probably.
That's okay. No, it's interesting because,
but,
you know, I was in Kenya in early 70s, and some of the folks, some of the women, were actually standing alongside the road selling some of their own work.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the villages, sometimes people would have work. And the work, and this happened in Israel as well, in the Bedouin Arab markets,
mm-hmm.
the work, and I have some of this work, is extraordinarily detailed and tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And then as things become popularized, and this goes for stitch work too, of course, the work gets bigger, the beads get bigger, and not quite as pristine.
Right.
And so I'm interested in when you talk about these different sizes and how you're learning. Is everything still available? All of these beads still available? They're still making the glass beads?
Oh yeah. I mean there's a very large market for seed beads still today, and I think you know, I mentioned the Czech bead industry
mm-hmm.
and then the Japanese bead industry. Those are the two top, I think, producers of the seed beads, the glass seed beads.
So what do most people do with them? What were you doing with them?
I was making necklaces and little bracelets and things, and you still find there has been a resurgence of seed bead art lately. You know, you see, like, boho earrings. People do little weaving with them. They're
mm-hmm.
beautiful. I still have a penchant for that type of work. It's
mm-hmm.
just not my focus really so much because of the needle weaving that I am doing. I'm more drawn to that now
mm-hmm.
because of the type of work that it is. I think it speaks to me more loudly. But there will always be a little soft spot in my heart for seed beads because, you know, I just love it. I think that also requires quite a bit of patience and
mm-hmm. I think so.
And skill and dexterity and attention to detail. And
what about eyesight?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, of course, now I have, you know, I work with glasses
mm-hmm.
and a headlamp mostly.
Uh-huh.
And, you know,
okay.
the work
yeah.
that I do for the December show, I'm often, you know, I need deadlines to focus.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, I'm, like, running up against that deadline. And it's October and November when I'm really pushing myself to get the body
mm-hmm.
of work out. And I work very well under pressure, so
mm-hmm.
I like the feeling of kind of being pushed and
mm-hmm.
like that. But, you know, we get into the shorter days, and less daylight. Uh-huh. And so I'm often working by headlamp at night and into the wee hours of the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it, though. Mm-hmm. It's so exciting to be with all of my toys, I call them, which mm-hmm. is all of this growing inventory of beads that I love. And I let them speak to me, and the work just kind of flows through. It's really fun. I love it.
Well, I think you mentioned something like feels like being let loose in a candy store.
Oh, yeah.
Which
when
I
walk into bead shops, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
My eyes get pretty big, and I try to keep my mouth shut. And I start finding the really old treasures, and it's fun.
And I'm going to get to that about heirloom material, too. But I was wondering what part color plays in all of this.
You know, I'll toot my own horn for a second, but
please.
I've always enjoyed playing with color and the way certain colors look together. But I've always felt like I had a fairly keen eye for putting certain colors together and playing with that aspect. So color plays a really huge role for me because I like the way things look aesthetically together.
Mm-hmm. Well, judging from seeing you and how you present, how you dress, etc., I would have thought that, but I can imagine how you would translate it here as well. So tell us now, you're working with old treasures.
I should back up there and say,
please.
Terry at Imogen Gallery,
Thank you, Terry.
Imogen Gallery, wears these beautiful cobalt beads all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she had mentioned at some point that her strand broke on her. And these were beads that came out of the Columbia River, I think. So really beautiful old trade beads and stunning.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever see Terry and she has these beads on, it's like...
Mm-hmm.
They're so lovely. And so I said, well, you should let me put my work on them. I'd love to, you know, I do a hand-woven cord, and it's really sturdy. I mean, mm-hmm. this is something that lasts for years.
Yeah, which is terrific.
And decades, you know, it's really
wonderful.
Great. And so she did, and she loved it, and that was when she had invited. She said, well, I'd love to see more of your work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so I dragged my feet for several months up to a year, and then finally, sometime during the summer of 2019, said, mm-hmm. when is that fiber art show? And she said, it's in December. I said, I think I could put together a body of work between now and then. Yeah, okay. It's like, are you sure? Like, yeah, I would love to. She's like, all right, you're in. Like, great, thanks.
Wow.
I really need the deadline to do the work.
I totally relate to that.
Yeah.
It's not one of my favorite qualities, but it's who I am and how I work best. So I'm delighted to hear that the gorgeous stuff you do is part of this way of life as well.
Yeah.
So now, where do you get ideas? You said you go into a shop, you see various beads. What about unusual pieces? Or, for example, what happened with just Terry's, you know, serendipitously, the cord broke. And so you're able to relate to the beads and do something beautiful with them.
Yeah.
Where else do you get your inspiration and the material to work with? For example, some of these heirlooms.
Right. You know, the woman who handed the work down to me had quite a few treasures. So she set me up with a few spools of thread first that, of course, now has grown into a massive inventory of thread colors that I have to select from. But and some old treasure beads.
Oh.
Out of her personal collection that I went on to make into my own pieces for myself and have added to, of course, because I can't stop personally. I just I look for vintage crystals. I look for old beads. When I have traveled, I often will go seeking out, you know, a bead store or a place that sells strands of beads. But really, I look to the pieces themselves if that makes sense, there's a really intuitive process that I have mm-hmm. when I sit down with the work. I usually have to kind of spill out all of the inventory or have it mm-hmm. all in front of me so that it can all speak together. Nice. And out of that, the piece develops on its own. Mm-hmm. Of the custom pieces that I have done, sometimes people just want their beads restrung exactly as they are, but with the hand-woven cord so that, you know, they have something sturdy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, is where creating a new heirloom piece would come into play. You know, like, the beads are already there. They've existed for centuries now, and now they get to be worn and treasured without the fear of them breaking, or they're not, you know, strung on raffia, how they may have been originally
right.
purchased, right?
Right.
So, you know, that always feels really nice. And there's, I was working with some old African trade beads, which are really an old resin bead that is the earliest form of resin or plastic that was created
mm-hmm.
as a material for trade instead of amber when amber
right.
became too expensive or the supply was in short. The Belgians and Germans created these early forms of bakelite, which is a resin bead that was traded in Africa. And there's these beautiful, they get, you know, kind of slightly discolored or little cracks start developing,
mm-hmm.
and then they start developing some really wonderful character. And you think about the history of these beads, like, wow, they're at least 100 years old, so if not older. And it just feels so good to be able to give them new life and set work on them that people are able to wear or maybe hang on the wall when
mm-hmm,
wearing
mm-hmm.
them. And
Actually, this was what you just said. It's fascinating to me because the trying to figure out sometimes whether what I have is plastic or amber.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken it to, right here in Astoria even, to jewelry shop to diagnose what is this? What is this material? And so the way you just described the early, the bakelite, I think you said? Yeah. Good. That's enlightenment. What is the thread? What's the material?
It's a nylon cord. It's mm-hmm. nylon beading cord.
Uh-huh.
Usually about a millimeter thick or half a millimeter thick. And I use, there's three strands that make up the cord that I weave.
Mm-hmm.
There's always two that are stable, kind of like the mini loom, if you will, for lack of a better reference. And
mm-hmm.
then one thread that weaves a very tight figure eight around the two. And I like the nylon because it's very sturdy. But also you can melt the knots, so
uh-huh.
it creates
right.
a nice seal
right.
on the ends.
So if somebody has, or if somebody wants to see your work, now there was a great article by Catherine Lacaz
yeah.
in,
nice journalism
in the
too,
Coast Weekend, actually, on January 13th. Catherine does it, who's also a theater person, does a great job in her writing about artists. But is there somewhere else people can see your work or get in touch with you if, for example, somebody's got a special piece that they would like to see what you can do with?
Yes. So my work is available year-round at Imogen Gallery.
On 11th and Marine Drive in Astoria.
Yes. And then people can contact me through the gallery. I'm really honored to be represented here.
Mm-hmm.
And through my own website, which is gypsybyolive.com.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
And people will see it's kind of under construction, but you can make contact with me there
Great.
Also.
Great. Thank you so much, Celeste. This is fantastic. I've got some stuff. I can't wait to get together with you someday.
Oh, yes.
The sooner the better.
I love working with old beads. I
yeah.
really do.
Wonderful.
They tell all the stories. It's so incredible.
Wonderful. My guest, Celeste Olivares, half of the Tango Twins, and I love saying that, also a dancer of all kinds. Celeste was dancing with Sparrow, the Sparrow Dance Company, And she pops up all over the place, lives in Astoria, as does her sister Estelle Olivares, who is the primary tango teacher. And also, we hope that when things open up again, we'll see you singing, perhaps with Midas Diggs, perhaps who knows where.
But, right, who knows? I still practice my singing because I can't stop that either. I love doing it.
Good. Especially in the middle of the night when you're, yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. And
congratulations on all this new work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Folks, you're listening to KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook. This is Arts Live and Local from the parking lot with a huge thank you to KMUN, and that's coastradio.org or KMUN.org. Oops. And that's, there's a big donate button there. And I've got one last piece of music to play for you. And don't get complacent. Let's keep on moving. We are so gratified with all the good things that have happened. And tune in on Monday at 3 o'clock on KMUN or 10 o'clock on KCPB for Locus Focus. And congratulations to all of us. FERC denied the Jordan Cove LNG key permit, and the Washington Department of Ecology denied the crucial shoreline permit for the Kalama world's largest methanol refinery. Gone. Done. And we've got so much to celebrate now. And Oregon driver's license for all starts this month. And Rain Magazine is still available, the reading. And the Vaulted Gallery, we're going to say goodbye to them, but you can get over there Friday to Sunday, 11 to 5. They are having an art sale. They are closing, and they made a beautiful space. But COVID did its job there, unfortunately. Stay tuned, and thanks for being with me.